Milton, good morning to you, and Mr. Schroeder, good morning to you. Do either council have any questions before we begin?
I have no questions.
No, Your Honor.
Then, Ms. Milton, you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, Chief Justice Hebekin, Your Honors, and counsel. My name is Amy Milton, and I represent the appellant Kathleen Spence, and I would appreciate reserving 2 minutes for rebuttal. I want to just start out that the issue at hand here is, does the doctrine of res judicata overcome federal law preemption in cases where the judgment was never timely appealed? Can parties collaterally attack a final judgment even if the judgment contained an erroneous provision? And that's the issue before the court today. The facts of this case, which I laid out in our brief, so I'll just be very brief with this. In summary, Kathleen, the wife, was awarded 48% of her husband Robert's military retirement by divorce decree, consent decree entered in 2011. The consent decree provided multiple provisions that ordered Robert to pay Kathleen an amount equal to any reductions in the military retirement benefits that may happen, and also awarded special alimony that could be modified in the event Robert waived his retirement and received military benefits. The court entered the consent decree. It was never appealed. Of course, Robert then elected to waive part of his retirement and received disability benefits in 2012. Kathleen then filed a complaint for modification, and she received an order of modification in 2018. That order then provided her with a judgment that offset the amounts that she lost by her husband's waiver of the retirement benefits. This order, again, was not appealed. After Kathleen filed an application for contempt, because Robert failed to pay the judgment that she was ordered in the order of modification and failed to pay the alimony she was awarded, counsel filed in 2020, after the term and more than 6 months had passed, filed a motion to vacate the order of modification previously entered. The district court vacated that order, stating that she did not have subject matter jurisdiction due to the federal preemption law.
Let me just start to zero in, if I may. So you're working on the assumption that all the world knows that a direct and precise award of disability is prohibited.
Yes, and I apologize. I've kind of given the facts, and then I'll go through the law. But yes, the Congress did pass under the Uniform Former Spouses Protection Act,
right,
that disability for military veterans could not be divided to equalize property settlement.
All the cases are trying to figure out what does that do to either pending or existing divorce decrees.
And that's exactly right. And so Supreme Courts, this is a case of first impression for this court, but state Supreme Courts all over the country are having to address this issue.
But maybe it's not first. And here's the reason I'm pondering this. The special alimony provision is there's a dollar a year, right?
That's correct.
The placeholder custom, right? And doesn't terminate upon a remarriage of the defendant, but only on the death of either party, familiar language. And then as to this case, this alimony provision shall be subject to modification only in the circumstance that there be a disability offset against plaintiff's net disposable non-disability pension and for no other reason. So my question is, that's the language that got us here today, right?
Correct.
The alimony subject to modification if this disability thing materializes.
There were, right, additional provisions as well, actually, in their decree that said he wasn't allowed to offset it and that he was to pay her an amount that equaled the difference between the retirement she was supposed to get. So there were some kind of additional protections in this decree in addition to the special alimony that specifically dealt with the
But this is the condition precedent,
correct,
right, for the ex-wife to come in and say, I would like more alimony.
Correct.
There's been a change.
That's right.
Right?
That's
the change. So that's the condition precedent. Why isn't that enough? Why isn't this more ordinary modification?
I believe it should be, since the decree was not appealed, neither was the order of modification. Based upon the doctrine of res judicata, I don't believe that the appellee can now come in and collaterally attack either order. Under the doctrine of reason.
I'm sorry. Which order are you contending has preclusive effect, or is it two? Is it the initial consent judgment, and then the initial, and then the subsequent modification order? Do they both have preclusive effect?
I would say yes, absolutely. The order of modification should have never been vacated based upon lack of subject matter jurisdiction.
It was a final judgment. There was an opportunity to appeal. All the requirements for issuer claim preclusion are met.
Absolutely. And if we even set that aside for now, just to go with the original, does the court have subject matter jurisdiction, even if the final order, if the case had gone to trial and the district court judge ordered that disability benefits could be divided? I believe that that's an appealable issue. I believe it's a defense that should be raised by the service member at trial and could then be raised on appeal. Like, the district court did not have the power to do that because they were preempted by Congress's law. But that's not the case here, and I think they relied on Howell. I'm sorry.
Was the district court using subject matter jurisdiction imprecisely? Or what's your understanding of what the district court meant by saying that it lacked subject matter jurisdiction? Because surely it has subject matter jurisdiction generally to modify decrees. We see that all the time.
Well, I don't know exactly what the basis was. The Supreme Court did rely after trial in that opinion where it was dismissed for lack of subject matter jurisdiction, relied on Howell versus Howell, which was a U.S. Supreme Court, which does give pretty vigorous language in regards to how a district court can divide military retirement. It says, you know, under no circumstances can you kind of use semantics to do so.
So is this a division of military benefits, or is this just an award of alimony based on income?
Well, actually, I don't think that even matters at this point in time, because even if the court erroneously awarded it based upon the doctrine of res judicata, actually Howell doesn't apply. The case in Howell is that a wife had an order that said she's to receive 50% of the military retirement. That's the only language that was there. When he, after the spouse then asked to have his military retirement waived and receive disability, she wanted to be indemnified. And the court said, no, you can't do that. You're preempted. That order was preempted.
That's not this order.
And that's not what happened here. So I think,
this decree is not you get half of his disability. This just says you're going to get some alimony, placeholder a dollar, some other features may or may not be controlling, right? And if he takes disability, you can come back.
You can come back and you can get an amount that was equal to. And what I'm arguing
is you'll get what you get.
Yeah, with the
but
district
he can't
court,
collaterally attack it at this point.
Would the district court be obligated in awarding special alimony to match it up dollar for dollar with what she lost? Or is it like an ordinary alimony award where there'd be some discretion?
If you're speaking just about the alimony, I believe that the court has the discretion to do that. However, I think there is additional language that actually says it should be dollar for dollar. Now, whether the court would have had the ability to do that at trial, I would argue that based upon preemption, they can argue that at trial. But here, I think the decree and the order...
They didn't get that far. The trial judge seemed to think she couldn't deal with this.
Right. She just said, basically, he can collaterally attack it based upon federal law. And the Supreme Court in Mandel even noted when the California Supreme Court, after it was remanded, the California Supreme Court in Mandel said, yeah, it's preempted. The disability benefits are preempted. However, upon remand, the California Supreme Court said, the wife brought up, hey, but this is res judicata. The doctrine of res judicata should apply. California Supreme Court said, we agree, and went ahead and enforced the division of the disability benefits.
The preclusive effect would be a matter of state law that the U.S. Supreme Court wouldn't even weigh in on, correct?
And that's exactly what the U.S. Supreme Court said in footnote 5 of Mantle. If you look at the procedural history, the service member asked the Supreme Court certiorari.
No, I beg your pardon.
Again,
so with respect to Mansell round 2, or is it 3, well, after the California Supreme Court said, well, under res judicata, She's in. And then husband sought cert, right?
Right.
And it was denied.
And it was denied, and they specifically stated that res judicata is a matter of state law only, and the U.S. Supreme Court does not have jurisdiction to actually hear a res judicata case.
Thank you.
Thank you. I believe I have 9 seconds, I guess, my rebuttal time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Schroeder. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. Mr. Chief Justice, Honorable Justices, may it please the Court, I'm Van Schroeder. I represent the appellee, Mr. Robert Parrish. And one of the questions I want to start with, and I'll throw it out to this Court, can you define the term special element? You know, we know that divorce is a creature of statute. And in the Red Bibles of this state, in Chapter 42, it talks about how you get divorced and what's all involved. And in one of those sections, alimony is defined. People can get alimony awarded by the district court, and there are certain specifications as to what will guide the award of alimony.
Well, what did it mean in the original consent decree then? And who drafted it? Was it Mr. Parrish or Ms. Parrish that drafted that original consent decree? So, not that I didn't know that answer. But what did it mean at that point?
Never ask the question unless you know the answer.
Well, first of all, you can call it a consent decree, but unfortunately the record doesn't actually reflect the discussion that went in before that. Rather than to say we agreed to it, I would say an acquiescence is probably a better term.
Was there a trial?
No, there was not.
Okay.
There was, however, a pretrial conference with the trial court, and that special alimony issue was brought up, and apparently the trial court agreed with it. However, at that time, all of us knew that federal preemption did not allow us to touch a disability pension through the VA. So what is special alimony? Where is it defined? Well, special alimony, I will submit, is the figment of the imagination of a clever trial lawyer trying to circumvent federal preemption of disability benefits. And that's where it came from.
If at the time of the original trial, there would have been a trial, and Mr. Parrish had been receiving this disability payments, could that income, could that have been considered for alimony purposes, or would it have been completely off the table?
As a part of his income, then yes, it could have been considered if we were going to deal with traditional alimony. But when you look in the Parrish decree, now on page 13 of that decree, there is a statutory alimony award, $1 a month for 48 months. Now what does that tell you? It tells us that Mrs. Parrish didn't really need the money. So this wasn't about her being destitute or relying upon either the disability award or the her does, share of did, the
does
military.
Does that tell us she didn't need the money or that she was anticipating that her ex-husband might try to convert his federal benefits into disability benefits?
Well, part of the reason for this special alimony was, what if he does get disability benefits?
And then her income would drop by half, or whatever the percentage is, and then maybe her need for alimony changes at that point. Safe assumption? Things the court could consider on a modification?
Yes, but again, go back to the decree. You have the traditional alimony award, $1 a month for 48 months, and then all of a sudden, in that portion of the decree that is dividing Mr. Parrish's military retired pay, right at the very end, you see this little blurb about special alimony. Where did that come from? Because they wanted to make sure she might be able to divide his disability income in the event it happened. And why would they be concerned about that? Well, because they knew it was a possibility.
Right. So is that prescribed by federal law, state law? Is that, if it's prescribed by federal law, is that a jurisdictional issue? Or a state court?
Well, if I understand the question, the answer is absolutely yes. I mean, that's what this decision by the district judge boiled down to was, federal law has preempted the states from addressing any division of this disability pension. We knew that from the time that the Former Spouses Protection Act was enacted. Almost every case coming out of this court since then has addressed the fact that federal law has preempted this issue. But again, it goes back to somebody trying to figure out a clever way around that preemption where it comes to disability payments and say, let's call it alimony. We can modify alimony.
Let's step back a second and suppose that at the time of trial, the military member, military spouse, was already receiving disability benefits that federal law said are not divisible. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, the court divides them in the decree and no appeal is taken. What's the effect of that? You're not contending it would be void for lack of subject matter jurisdiction, are you?
Well, actually, I am.
You are?
Yes, sir.
You're saying that the federal preemption is a matter not just of substance, but also of jurisdictional authority of state courts.
And the way I read the law, it's come from this court, I would agree with that. And I'll cite you specifically, there's two cases cited in my brief that I think pretty well covers this issue. The first one is Boyd versus Cook. Now, it's factually different. It's not on all fours with our problem. But the rules of law that come out of that case, number one, we cannot bestow, we cannot confer, that is, we, the litigants, cannot confer subject matter jurisdiction on a tribunal that has no subject matter jurisdiction to begin with. We can't agree to it. We can't do it by default. Very explicit in that Boyd case. It also says that any decision made that was void of subject matter jurisdiction is a nullity. And that's also the rule that comes out in Spady, which is cited in my brief. But more to the point with your question, if you look at the Ryan case, which was cited by Judge Martinez when she initially vacated the original order of modification, look at Ryan. What happened in Ryan, if I understood the opinion, was the Ryans were divorced and the trial judge did divide his VA retired pay. There was no appeal taken from that. Then, a couple of times thereafter, there were modification actions brought up in the Ryan case. Nothing was said at that time. It was when Mrs. Ryan chose to cite Mr. Ryan in contempt because he didn't pay her his portion or her portion of the disability pay. It came back before the district court, and the district judge vacated that portion of the decree, which gave her part of his disability pay, and refused to cite him in contempt. End of story. I mean, that case has so many parallels to this one. When you talk about res judicata, no, it's not res judicata if the court didn't have subject matter jurisdiction to make that decision in the first place.
Probably going to ask the same thing.
Great. So this is where we better root beer. Okay, so you're contending that the trial court didn't have subject matter jurisdiction over a dissolution of marriage and the distribution of property and alimony?
I'm not saying that, no.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Are you using no subject matter jurisdiction?
I'm understanding you to say it's a divisible concept, that the trial court may have subject matter jurisdiction in part, but not in other parts. Isn't that really the key to what you're arguing?
And maybe to break that down into smaller pieces, sure, the district court had jurisdiction to decide an alimony question. But the district court did not have jurisdiction to chop up a VA disability waiver pension. And that's essentially what the appellant in this case did ask the district court to do.
Is it your contention that when a federal law preempts a judge from doing something, that that's equivalent to a lack of subject matter jurisdiction?
I would say on a very basic level, yes.
Do you have authority to support that proposition?
Well, I think that goes to the Howell case that the most recent SCOTUS matter that we've cited, if you read that, and I like the explanation by Justice Breyer that you can call it whatever you want, but if you're trying to chop up a disability pension, you can't do it, period. States are barred from doing that. No subject matter jurisdiction.
Haven't we addressed the circumstance here in our prior cases in Kramer and Longo?
Well, the simple answer is yes. And I know you wrote the Longo opinion, if I recall, but be that as it may, the problem is they were talking about real alimony. They were talking about a litigant, a wife who needed the income, and they weren't talking special alimony. There wasn't any mention of special alimony. It was alimony. And because her income was impacted negatively by the disability pension, she could come back to court and modify her alimony.
But here's what we said in part in Longo, author actually Justice Steffen, in 2003. But I was there, for good or for worse. That, referring back to Kramer, that the disability event of the award of the disability, the court may consider such benefits in determining whether there has been a material change in circumstances which would justify modification of an alimony award. That's kind of conventional modification.
Yes, it is.
Right? Something happened. And maybe we could set aside, was it fully anticipated? But I don't think that's the situation here. And there are cases, and you all have addressed that to the court in your briefs, right? Everybody knew disability would happen. So I kind of go back to where I was a few minutes ago. Perhaps this is just simpler. Something, the critical event to trigger a reexamination of alimony has occurred.
And if I may, when you look at the trial in this matter, they weren't talking about income. They weren't talking about need. They weren't talking about reduction in income. They were just simply saying, we lost because of a disability pension. We want it back. And that is without subject matter jurisdiction. So please reaffirm the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
9 seconds, Ryan.
We'll give you 30 seconds.
Talk fast. I want to answer the question in regards to subject matter jurisdiction. And a South Carolina case under Kuhn actually states federal law may supplant domestic relation law, like in this area, pursuant to the Supremacy Clause, but it does not preempt state subject matter jurisdiction. And I think what's really important here is that federal preemption can be brought up in the original action or on appeal. It's an affirmative defense. Once the order has been entered, and in this case, both the decree was entered and then an order of modification is entered, the facts of the matter or whether alimony was needed or not needed aren't even relevant because the doctrine of res judicata applies here. Even if this court were to find that she doesn't deserve alimony, she should have never gotten it in the first place, the doctrine of res judicata prevents the appellee from collaterally attacking those orders. And I believe the U.S. Supreme Court has made that very clear and has not overturned themselves in footnote 5 in the Mansell decision. So until that happens, I believe res judicata actually applies in this case, so we wouldn't even need to get to the simple alimony, whether there was a material change in circumstances, because it was already established in the decree and already ordered in the modification. So my time is up. Thank you very much.
Counsel, that concludes arguments in Parrish versus Parrish. So you are excused. And the court will go on to the next case of the day, which is State versus Al-Khazahi.